is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, March 16th, 2020. I'm Buster Olney. I'm home. Taylor Schwenk is producing from home via Skype. How you doing, Taylor?
I'm good. Deep in the hill country of central Connecticut is where we are recording from. Normally I'm in like a dark windowless studio, but now I'm right next to a window and all I see are woods. So, minor improvement. It's the little things in times like these.
That's your new normal, right?
Yeah, for sure. Coming down here, I set up all my gear because I used to do this for fun. So I would record podcasts with my buddies and, you know, so as soon as we got the word that was like, you probably shouldn't be in the office, I was like, all right, let's go. I've been doing this for years. So this is no big deal. This is my ideal work from home scenario.
Well, yeah. And I can tell you this, like the new normal for me is my two kids just can't stand me. Right. I got one who's 20 and I got one who's 15 and they are already sick of the idea of being at home with dad and mom here for the next for weeks to come. For me, like, I mean, obviously our priority is keeping them safe. But then I'm like, huh, you know what? They're home and maybe they can help me out with the lawn because it looks like I'm going to have the best lawn in the neighborhood this year.
Nice. What's first on your list? What are you tackling first?
Oh, I'm going to be fertilizing the lawn coming up. I'm going to, you know, got sticks, got the wintertime cleanup, got some old leaves, and I can always find things for the kids to do. Like, there's nothing better than child labor, right?
Absolutely. I was a victim of child labor for many years, so I get it.
There you go. All right. Let's start the podcast. We send our best wishes to folks around the country who are dealing with this terrible moment in our country's history. It's a time of uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen in Major League Baseball or any other walk of life for that matter. Understanding that and realizing that so many of you among the listeners are hunkered down at home and waiting, and maybe you're putting your kids to work as well. Our intention is to continue bringing you the podcast. We tape division previews for the National League Central and American League West with excellent input from folks who cover those teams. And today we will present the American League West. As we move forward, we'll bring you interviews with stars of the best moments, the best teams. We got some good things in the works. For example, later in the week, we're scheduled to speak with David Freese, the pivotal figure in arguably the greatest game ever, Game 6 of the 2011 World Series. And I suspect we're going to have a conversation about whether or not that was, in fact, the greatest game in baseball history. So some of the news and notes before we get to the American League West preview, with opening day pushed back to at least April 9th. That looks like an optimistic date because the CDC issued guidance yesterday that people throughout the United States should avoid crowds of 50 or more people for the next 8 weeks. That would seem to push back the possible coalescence of spring training sites until mid-May at the earliest, because teams will need a second spring training. Some other news and notes. Team workouts now have been shut down by Major League Baseball from camp to camp. The Baseball Hall of Fame is closed indefinitely due to the coronavirus. According to Jeff Passan, a minor leaguer in the Yankees camp tested positive for the coronavirus. The Nationals released reliever Hunter Strickland. And Ted Cox, the first major league player with hits in his first six at-bats when he was with the Red Sox, has died at the age of 65 from multiple myeloma. Now, before we get to the American League West previews, support for Baseball Tonight comes from the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. With the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card, you'll earn unlimited 5% back at Walmart online. That's 5% back at Walmart online when you grab new shades for your beach trip, new boots for your hiking trip, and it's a good time for hiking trips, or noise-canceling headphones when you need some vacation me time. You also earn 2% at Walmart stores, restaurants, and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One NA. Steve Sparks is a radio analyst for the Houston Astros on KBME. And Sparksy, as we talk about the 2020 Astros, let's address the elephant in the room. In your eyes, how are they going to be in dealing, the players, and dealing with this unprecedented situation that they're going to deal with in road games?
You know, I think it might even be harder, Buster, than what they even anticipate. We're seeing a little bit of it in the Grapefruit League so far, the booing and things of that nature. And I don't care who you are, and there's been a lot of popular players come through this city the last few years, but a guy like Altuve getting booed for the first time really in his career has got to hurt. You know, so you you always wonder if somebody's going to try to do too much. I know in my case, if I tried to do too much, I was always going to go the other direction. These guys have a lot more talent, so it's going to be interesting to see if they can stay with them within themselves. But offensively, I think this team's still a juggernaut.
Yeah, and just I'm curious, this spring, what sort of resources have they had in terms of anticipating how to deal with it? You know, are there players that they can talk to, mental coaches, Dusty Baker?
Right, yeah, you know, they certainly have sports psychologists on hand. I'm sure there's a crisis manager to help them through some interviews, some tough questions, and what to anticipate. But it's just going to be the redundant of having to answer the same thing over and over and hear the same things when you're in the on-deck circle, you know, hurtful things. And, you know, rightly so, wrongly so, whatever you want to believe, I mean, this team is owned up to what they did at this point, and they just got to live with the consequences.
All right. To me, the biggest question is about the rotation. What do you see there?
Well, it's been, you know, two or three days ago, Justin Verlander has a lack situation. It is something very similar to what he had in 2015 with Detroit. He did say it does not feel as severe as it did in 2015, where he didn't make his first start until sometime late May, early June of that season. So hopefully it'll just be a little bit of time. I mean, it's their thinnest portion of their roster right now, and that's the starting rotation. Right now, if Verlander was healthy, it was going to be Verlander, Greinke, Lance McCullers coming off Tommy John surgery, Jose Urquidy, who got a taste as a major leaguer last year, who did really well in the postseason. And then you have three guys vying for the fifth spot in Josh James, who I think they want to win the job, Austin Pruitt and Framber Valdez. And I think the two other guys probably go to the bullpen who don't make the rotation. So it's not real deep. It's not very plentiful. Most teams need 9 or 10 starters to get through a season. And I think the Astros are going to get tested early.
In your mind, who's the pivotal player on their roster?
Pivotal player on their roster is probably going to be Justin Verlander's health. I mean, I would have to go right toward their weakest spot, their Achilles heel, the rotation. So being able to get him back and healthy. Last year we saw in the postseason that he wasn't as strong as he was in a Cy Young campaign. So I think you're already going to think about shaving some innings off of his log anyway. So that means Greinke's probably the next man up. So he becomes probably the most pivotal man on the team right now, because you need one or two of those guys that you can count on every fifth day.
Among players who spent a lot of time in the minor leagues last year, who do you think could step up this year and have an impact?
Spent a lot of time. Well, it's got to be Jose Urquidy, starting pitcher, who spent at least, you know, more than half of the season last year in the minor leagues. Now, we saw him win a game in the World Series, becoming the second player born in Mexico, starting pitcher, to win a game in the World Series. And he went home to a lot of fanfare in Montemont, Mexico. He's a hero now, and rightly so. They're very excited about him. But Brian Abreu is a guy that came up and got a taste last year. He's a pitcher. And a Taylor Jones is a 26-year-old, 6'7", first baseman from Gonzaga, a new sport guy, who looks like he's ready to make that jump to the big league. The Astros, with a ton of guys that become free agents after this season, with all three starters in the outfield, Wrigley, Springer, and Reddick. You got Gurriel, Aledmys Diaz, a plethora of pitchers. This is their window to get something done again this year, and they all know it.
Give me a guesstimate before you go on how many wins they have during the course of the season.
I'd say 92-93. That's coming down quite a bit. Oakland's won 97 the last 2 years. The Astros won 107 last year. But I think that the division, the AL West, is much more competitive. I think the Rangers and Angels are going to give everybody a run for their money each time they match up. So I think it's going to be tougher to get 100 wins this year. I'd say 92-93.
All right, Sparksy. I'll see you on opening day.
Sounds good, Buster. Take care, man.
Alan Gonzalez covers baseball for ESPN and a lot of that coverage on the West Coast. And so we had him on to talk about the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And Alan, as you know, you can't talk about the Angels without talking about the state of their rotation. What can you tell us?
I can tell you that they spent the entire offseason, even after they signed Anthony Rendon, looking for a piece at the top of that rotation, either through free agency, either through the trade market. They weren't able to get it. They're going to spend the entire season looking for a piece at the top of the rotation, and they're hoping to get one before the end of July. As things stand right now, it's precarious, which is what you could have said about their rotation for the last maybe 5 years or so. Shohei Ohtani, if we start the season on time, Shohei Ohtani will be on the injured list. Griffin Canning will be on the injured list as well, or both of them will be unavailable to them. So it's going to be Dylan Bundy and Julio Teheran, two guys that they picked up in the offseason. It's going to be Andrew Heaney at the top of it, and then they're just going to try to fill it out as best they can from there. Buster, as you know, this is a team with aspirations of returning to the playoffs this year, especially given the money that they gave Rendon. But they understand as well as anybody that they need more legitimate starting pitching if they're going to make a real run in the American League West.
Now that Joe Maddon has been around Shohei Ohtani, how would you expect, once Ohtani's ready to go fully, how would you expect he's going to use him?
You know, initially, Joe Maddon talked about how he would like to see Shohei Ohtani bat on the days that he starts, but that is not going to happen. They're going to actually use Shohei Ohtani very similarly to the way they used him in 2018. So he's going to start once a week instead of once every five games. He's not going to hit the day before his starts, and he's not going to hit the day after his starts, which means he's definitely not going to hit the day of his starts. But one thing that Billy Eppert told me when I talked to him about Shohei Ohtani's schedule is that the way they did it in Japan is that they were more conservative with him on the front end, so that toward the back end, late in the season, if a team is making a run at the playoffs, they could be a lot more aggressive with him. So if the Angels are in it late in the year and Shohei Ohtani is healthy, expect to see him in the lineup more often. Maybe he's making starts every five games. They're hoping to be more aggressive with him late. That's why they're going to be very conservative with him early.
Where is Maddon in terms of the construction of the first four spots in his lineup?
I think he's got that one pretty much mapped out right now. Tommy La Stella is going to lead off and start against right-handers. He's going to play second base. And I think following him in the order, it'll probably be Mike Trout, Anthony Rendon, and Shohei Ohtani, respectively.
What's his logic behind that?
Well, I think he likes Mike Trout batting second. I think he wants to give him opportunities with guys on base, so he's not going to lead him off a la Chris Bryant with the Cubs. He likes Tommy La Stella's on-base ability against right-handed pitching. And just the ability for Anthony Rendon to hit behind them, I think, is going to give this lineup a dimension that it hasn't had in a long time.
What's your sense of how he's going to handle Albert Pujols, who, of course, has been on this long-term deal with the Angels?
Yeah. Albert, I think, last year benefited pretty well from not having to play first base every day. The Angels began to sit him against, not against all right-handers, but they were sitting him against a lot of right-handers and just making sure that he was in the lineup every time a lefty was on the mound. It helped him to stay healthy, at least throughout the course of the year. He played a lot more first base in 2019 than he did in 2018 and 2017. And I think he held up pretty well. I think the plan is something similar. The other guy who's going to play first base for the Angels is Matt Tice. He's a left-handed hitter. He could be in the lineup against righties when Albert takes a day. I think he's going to follow a similar protocol to what Billy Epler and Brad Ausmus mapped out for him last year.
When do you think Joe Adell will arrive in the big leagues? Assuming, and let's just say, for argument's sake, we start the season on May 1st.
Yeah, I think he's going to still get at least a couple of weeks in AAA. I think the world of Joe Adell. I think he could be probably, if not a star, close to a star in the big leagues. But he did struggle with AAA last year when they moved him up. He has shown that in his early stints at new affiliates, a lot of swing and miss, a lot of strikeouts. That's the one concern that scouts have about him is his contact rate.
I think they'll justify that by sending him a AAA, get him some seasoning, and then he'll be up shortly thereafter. I would say maybe if we start the season on May 1st, I would think he's probably there by June.
1 minute left. I got two questions for you. Give me a guesstimate on the number of wins for the Angels.
Oof. I'm going to say 87 wins, which based on the way these last 5 years have gone, that may or may not be good enough to get a wild card spot. It's going to be contingent on health. They don't have the greatest 40-man roster depth still, so they're going to have to stay healthy to get those 87 wins.
But with 87 wins, of course, it would be a year of progress. And lastly for you, Mike Trout starts the year 285 homers. He's 28 years old. Albert Pujols will start the year with 656 homers. Who finishes their career with more homers, Trout or Pujols?
Wow. You know what, Buster? I actually, I remember when I was on the beat, I posted this question on Twitter and I got thousands of responses. And for the only time in my life, I got 50-50 in terms of the answers to this question. It is such a fascinating question that I have thought about a lot. I still think Albert Pujols, not because Mike Trout isn't great, not because Mike Trout may not be better than Albert Pujols someday, but to hit that many home runs for such a long time takes a lot of skill, yes, but it also takes a lot of luck, and you got to avoid those long-term injuries. I'm going to bet Albert Pujols just because look at the amount of people in history who have hit that many home runs. It's just very, very rare.
I'm going to say Trout because I think that Rendon's presence over the next 3-4 years is really going to help him get pitched to, but we'll have to see, you know, how that plays out. All right, Alden, thanks for doing this.
Thank you, Buster.
Susan Slusser covers the Athletics for the San Francisco Chronicle. She's also a badass on skates and snow. You got to tell that story, Susan, at the outset. You are not currently in spring training, and can you tell us why?
I am not. I was trying to stop a breakaway playing ice hockey and slipped and wound up with my skate twisted underneath me in the wrong direction, which fib-tib, broken ankle surgery, so out for a month to 6 weeks. And yeah, that followed about a month and a half after breaking an orbital bone skiing. So I think my editor suggested that no dirt bikes should be in my future, and they might have to redo my contract at some point to put no dangerous sports.
But you're going to plow ahead covering the team. And I think one of the issues, and you would agree with me, that's going to hover over this team during the course of the year is the status of Marcus Semien, their shortstop, who took such a big step forward last year. Look, Mookie Betts is going to be the number one free agent in the upcoming class. What is Marcus's status now, you think, in regards to that?
Well, Marcus Semien would love to come back to the A's. You know, he's from the Bay Area. The A's are the team that made him, you know, a big name baseball player. And he's a team leader. I think he's very important for the A's to want to keep. The problem is the A's also have the Mets on the corners, Matt Chapman and Matt Olson. Those are guys they're going to want to sign long term, certainly. When you start talking about three guys of that caliber, you're starting to talk about maybe upwards of $300 million. The A's, we all know, cannot do that. The last time they signed anyone to a significant contract was Eric Chavez. His $66 million is the most in team history. That was in 2002. I just don't really see it. So it's going to be a tough one, but I cannot figure out a way the A's can bring Marcus Semien back. And they'll have to just hope maybe that it's not a distraction and that going into a free agent season that he puts up even bigger numbers than last year. Now they can give him a qualifying offer, so they could stave off that decision for a year.
Now, you know, this is that during Billy Beane's time running baseball operations, they've gone up to the trade deadline and they've been open-minded, and they've added while also trading veterans. Do you think that it's at all possible with Marcus, or is it going to be like Barry Zito where they'll just ride it out to the end?
I think if the A's do anything at the trade deadline this year, it'll be like last year, where they look to improve the team. I don't think it would be to unload anyone, but certainly not, you know, arguably their best all-around player and a team leader, longest tenured position player. I would be stunned by that. I do think if the A's are in it, we could see them going out to get a double play partner for Semien. I think a second baseman, a good left-handed hitting or switch hitting veteran second baseman is something that would potentially be on their radar at that point.
How do you assess the rotation?
extremely good, assuming full health. AJ Puck's already got a little bit of a shoulder issue. The A's are convinced that it's not major, but it's possible he'll miss the first week or two of the regular season. But my goodness, it's almost impossible, Buster, to imagine that we're talking about a team that lost three veteran starters after last season, and their rotation is much better. But that's because Sean and I will be back for the full season. Frankie Montas, who was tremendous before he got popped for steroids, is back after serving that 80-game suspension. And then you've got Puck and Jesus Luzardo. And Luzardo, I'm telling you, is the real deal. This is a potential superstar pitcher. And Mike Fiers, who's, a very serviceable guy, might wind up being the opening day starter for the second year in a row, a workhorse. He's interesting because, with questions will surround him all year about being the one public whistleblower in the steroid scandal, but I think that has only increased his leadership in the A's clubhouse.
What sort of potential do the A's see in Luzardo?
I think they think, potential all-star, possible rookie of the year, and, down the line, maybe a Cy Young. This is a left-hander who, not just that his stuff is tremendous, which it is, he throws upper 80s, he's got a killer curve, he's got a great changeup. I mean, he knows how to pitch. He's so young. He's 23. But he loves to trick hitters. He is out there thinking. He is very calm, very cool. He's a bulldog too. I mean, he's got every single attribute you would want. He's special. He's really special. And AJ Puck, he's drawn obvious comparisons to Randy Johnson because he's a 6'10" lefty, 6'9" lefty. And he's got that kind of stuff, not maybe Hall of Fame comparisons yet, but along those lines. So these are two guys the A's are extremely excited about. They've both missed time with injury. Puck is 3 years removed from Tommy, 2 years removed from Tommy John. And Luzardo had shoulder problems last year. So they're going to be careful with them, not necessarily restricted or limited innings, but definitely they will get extra days here and there.
Gerrit Cole is gone from the Astros. He signs with the Yankees. Justin Verlander, physical issues in spring training. How do you assess these two teams, and how close are they?
Well, they were close last year, and I think the A's would argue that all things being equal, they should have been even closer. It's interesting. If Verlander doesn't start the season on the roster, if he's out hurt, and the A's can get off to a hot start, which they typically never are. They're always a slow starting team. They're bound and determined to get off to a better start this year. If the Astros somehow slip a little, if Verlander, Cole aren't in that rotation, the A's, I think, feel like maybe they have an opportunity to pounce. They would love to do that early, maybe get a little separation. They certainly feel as if they will contend neck and neck all season. Who knows what happens with the Astros, with all they're dealing with. Sometimes that can be a good thing, right? Especially with somebody like Dusty Baker now, you could maybe see that they band together. Their roster is certainly still extremely talented. The A's have been very careful in saying, we don't think they're going anywhere. They're a great team. But any edge the A's potentially could take, they would love to take it, and I think they will try their hardest.
Before you go, give me a win total guesstimate on the 2020 A's.
Well, they've won 97 each of the last 2 years, so the safe bet would be to say 97, but I'm going to go 99. Their goal is 100. I'm going to say 99.
All right, Susan. Well, hang in there.
All right. Thanks, Buster. Cast off in 3 weeks.
Ryan Devich covers the Seattle Mariners for the Seattle Times. And obviously, Ryan, this team is rebuilding. What will represent success for the Mariners in 2020?
Definitely not win-loss record. I think you're looking at a 100-loss team. In talking with Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais, they're trying to measure success based on improvement from the young players. They're going to play guys with less than a year experience or a year less experience, probably 8 to 10 of them and more throughout the course of the season. So what they're looking for is developmental gains from players like Kyle Lewis, Jake Fraley, Shed Long, J.P. Crawford, Justus Sheffield, all these young prospects that they're going to just give the reins to. They want to see individual improvement. It might not always be in numbers or flash lines or ERA, but just are they adjusting to the big league level and can they handle the situation?
Give me the name of a young player you think is going to take a big step forward this year.
Wow, that's a tough one. I've really liked what I've seen from Justus Sheffield. He's added a two-seam fastball and gone away from the four-seam fastball, something that was a wise move because he has such a low spin rate. I think he's going to be significantly better just in terms of fastball command. And I think Evan White, the young kid from that has never played above double A, they gave a $24 million contract extension to. He's going to be the everyday first baseman. I think there'll be times where he struggles to hit, but I watched him play defense, and it's like watching Mark Grace out there. It is absolutely amazing how well he moves at first base. Scott Service left to invoke JT Snow. I heard others say Doug Minkiewicz, but he's one of the best defensive first basemen I've ever seen, and I think that'll be something that'll help this infield defense tremendously.
Whether you want to call it tanking, whether or not you want to call it rebuilding, we know that sometimes it works. It worked for the Houston Astros. It looks like it's working for the Chicago White Sox, and sometimes it doesn't. The Philadelphia Phillies maybe be an example of that. What's the biggest area of concern for the Mariners as it begins to build that next wave?
I just think the developmental aspect of the jump from AAA to Major League Baseball is the biggest aspect for them. The Mariners have had a bad tradition of having top-level prospects struggle from that leap from AAA to the big leagues and sustaining, whether it's Dustin Ackley or Nick Franklin, Brad Miller, you know, a host of pitchers. They just have had that issue where they haven't been able to push through. And I think this new player development program that they're running may be better. But that's always the biggest fear, is that you've accumulated all this talent and they look great in prospect rankings and it looks good on scout sheets and, you know, the 2080 scale. But at the end of the day, they can't come through at the big league level. I think that's their biggest fear, is that all this projection that they've done and all the moves they made, if a good portion of these guys aren't at least everyday players, then that the failure, it's been a failure.
What's the current level of patience for the Mariners fan base?
You know, it's amazing. The tear it down or tear it down, blow it up has become the new thing from fire everyone. It used to be always fire everyone, now it's just blow it up. But so many of the people that said blow it up now a year into this don't like it. And I think that's what fans don't really understand, is that these kinds of things take time. I do think that the Mariners are trying to sell the idea that what these young kids are tangible. You know, every result is tangible towards their future, and I think that will help. So if guys like Kyle Lewis play well or Evan White play well early and give something they're excited about, something that they can wrap their arms around, I think fans will be happy. But, you know, if these kids don't really show something this year, then the impatience level will grow. And, I mean, that's not good for Jerry DePoto, who's in year two of a contract extension, of a three-year contract extension. So these kids have to show something, I think, for him to feel firm in what's going on.
And what's the patience of ownership? And the reason why I ask that question, you see an example like the Padres, who cut all the way back, and after about 3 years of struggles, you could tell ownership started to get impatient. They signed Eric Hosmer. What's your assessment of the current patience level of ownership?
I think it's they're relatively patient. It's a new ownership group. John Stanton is a local businessman. He has ties to the community, and I think he understood where the Mariners were at a couple of years ago, that they weren't going to get any farther than the second wild card, that was their absolute apex that they could achieve, and then they would have to roll the dice in the playoffs. And he wanted something more sustainable. And because he's kind of more of a local guy with long-term goals, he's willing to wait it out, and that he's willing to let Jerry DePoto do this is something that the previous ownership would never do. But, you know, they're going to have their lowest attendance within the last 10 years this season. It was down significantly last year. Season tickets are down. Ratings are down. All those things cost money. And so you want to start seeing progress. And I think that patient level could diminish quickly if they don't see some level of improvement this year. And it just doesn't have to be records.
Presumably they'll deal off any marketable veteran during the year. Who might fit that category?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Kyle Seager's on the team by the end of the season. And I think they'll try and move D. Gordon as well. Seager's got that kind of poison pill clause in his contract. But given the third base market and what we saw Josh Donaldson go for, they pushed hard to move him in the offseason. And I think they think if Seager starts off hot, they can move him by midseason. Gordon just doesn't fit on the roster. They're going to play Shed Long, so they'll try and move him. And if Taijuan Walker or Kendall Graveman pitch well, I definitely think they'll move them as well. They're one-year commits, and a team might need a back-of-the-rotation starter. If those guys pitch well, they'll definitely move them as well.
And finally, give me a guesstimate on wins for the 2020 Mariners.
I said they're going to lose 102 games, so 60 wins, 60 and 102 is what I've been going with. And that could change, but right now that's what I'm thinking.
All right, Ryan. I appreciate it, man.
All right. Take it easy, Buster.
Evan Grant covers the Texas Rangers for the Dallas Morning News. And, Evan, the Rangers' old ballpark was famously hitter-friendly with the wind gusting out to right. What's your sense of how their new ballpark is going to play?
I think anything would be a little bit more fair, right, than the old ballpark, Buster, because of the jet stream effect that happened. And when you had the wind that blew out the right field, it was so hitter-friendly. And then you factored in the heat during the late summers, and it was just a very inhospitable area, arena. I do know this, that the gap in left center is going to be a little bit shorter than it was at Globe Life Park. But otherwise, the dimensions are going to be pretty similar. But when you take the wind out of play, I think that's going to make the park best play pretty fair, and I think you're going to have stronger pitching performances now, because as I've talked to a number of pitchers here, they're just it did sap your strength, it did sap your durability. So there's still some things to be determined. They haven't acted. They've done wind tunnel studies. They've done all of that, but they did that with the old park. And until you actually get in there and get the actual conditions, it's a little bit hard to exactly replicate things. But they're confident this is going to be a more fair park. It's going to be easier to construct a team based on kind of traditional blueprints, I guess.
They've been aggressive in adding starting pitching the last two off seasons. What's your assessment of where they stand with the rotation?
I think it's a very deep rotation, and it's a rotation that has the ability to be a real asset for them in a time when more and more teams are going to the opener and limited innings for starters. I think the fact that you've got these veterans, if they all stay healthy, you've got a staff capable of giving you well above 850 innings. And if you do that, it does tend to cover up some other issues. This offense struggled last year because it often found itself behind in multi-run holes early in games. And so I don't think that there would be that same kind of pressure on the offense to try and create big innings early. And secondly, I think that obviously a pen that is more rested, that isn't having to pitch the fifth and the sixth innings every night, is more manageable for Chris Woodward, makes it more of an asset. And there are a ton of, if unproven, but power arms down in that bullpen for the Rangers to go to. So I think the idea that this rotation could be durable and give them innings, I think it really can bleed over into multiple areas around the roster to help this club out.
What's got to happen for them to contend in the American League West, which feels more open than in recent years because of what the Astros have been going through?
Yeah, I think the Astros situation is a big X factor. I do think Oakland obviously is going to be very good, and certainly the offense in Los Angeles looks like it's going to be very powerful. I can only say this. I think the Rangers are a better team than they were a year ago. I think they're a 82, 83 wins team as it stands right now. But if this pitching staff does get off to a good start, if Elvis Andrus and Rougned Odor do bounce back somewhat offensively, then the lineup looks a lot deeper. And you never know what kind of role you get on. Remember, this team was going to be willing to spend big money in the offseason, didn't end up doing it. I feel like if this team is a player at the deadline, they will be much more willing to go out and try and make a package to put them over the top. Clearly, one of the third basemen that could be on the market would be a very attractive option for them.
I heard from other front offices they are really surprised at how thin the Rangers are among their position players. Who's the best up-and-coming young position player? In other words, a guy who spent a lot of last year, all of last year in the minor leagues.
Yeah, I don't know that they'll have a guy this year that would make a significant impact on the major league team among the position players, but they've got a legitimate frontline catching prospect in Sam Huff, who should start the season at Double A. They've got an elite defender in center field in Leody Tavares, who also will probably start the season at Double A. He acquitted himself okay offensively last year. I think if he shows any ability to make some steps offensively, he's going to become a much more viable big league solution. And this team has been very impressed with Sheridan Apostle, the third baseman that they got from Pittsburgh 2 years ago in the Keone Kella deal. He's been very, very impressive in spring training. And then you get into last year's first-round pick, Josh Young from Texas Tech, who the Rangers feel like is going to be fast mover through the organization. So that's kind of the top level of position player prospects for this club. I don't think they're going to get significant impact from those guys at the big league level this year, but I think they are going to be in position next year in 2021 to start to integrate some of those guys in and boost up some spots that have been weak for them.
All right, Evan. Thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you.
All right, Buster. Take care.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for this Monday. Quarantined Stadium Man writes in, and I think this is a question for all of us. You should all reflect on this. How many times a day is it okay to cry about there not being baseball? How many times have you cried, Buster?
All right, Taylor, I think, you know, I actually have sort of a mental guideline on this. I'm going to say once a day.
Once a day.
Pity party. Yeah, you get your pity party once a day, and then it's better to spend your time doing other stuff, right?
Yeah, that's
fair.
I
mean, this is something that's affecting a lot of people in a lot of different ways, and we miss baseball for sure. But I think once a day should cover it, and then maybe you could go on to, you know, doing something else that helps other people, or in my case, going out to force my children into labor to make my lawn better.
I like it. All right. Yeah. You probably shouldn't wallow in self-pity, too much, because there's probably going to be a lot of time to do that. So yeah, once a day, good guidelines. David Cooper writes in at D_Coops_7. How will another year of eligibility for seniors in the NCAA impact the Major League Baseball draft in the coming future? And after we recorded, we kind of speculated about this. The NCAA did come down and say, everyone gets an extra year of eligibility for spring sports. So, it will be interesting to see how this all sort of plays out. Lots of decisions to be made for these players, coaches, and for the folks in the big leagues.
Yeah, and David, I wish I could give you a good answer, but here's what the situation is right now in baseball. I actually get called by about three or four evaluators of various teams saying, what have you heard about the draft? Well, like, what do you know? People in the game don't know how this is going to play out. It's one of many things that they have to work out. And oh, by the way, the Red Sox investigation is still not closed. There's so much pending. It's unbelievable.
I feel like they should give us the Red Sox investigation the next couple of weeks just to like tie people over. They would. I feel like that'd be bad times.
Oh,
but
you know what? A good, and I'm totally kidding here, in a difficult situation. I think if, you know, baseball at this point might go, you know what? The Red Sox are suspended from play for the first 2 months of April and May. And then they can say they came down with a hard penalty. I'm just kidding.
But, last one for today. Debbie Gammons Brown writes in, okay, Baseball Tonight podcast team, give us your top baseball, sports movies, and books to get us through this time of no sports and social distancing. We can talk sports stuff specifically, but if you have any, I feel like we should be doling out recommendations. I feel like this is like a cultural thing that's happening. It's like, what are you watching? What are you reading? What are you doing? So what can you give us a rec to start off here, Buster? We don't have to run through a bunch because we got a lot of time on our hands.
Yeah, and I just made reference to the Red Sox, so it's appropriate that Debbie Gammons Brown would be making this request because she is a big Red Sox fan. And you know what? I'm already in my mind, I'm putting together a show on that. Like, I'm going to get a couple people who are really good at that and will generate top 10 lists. How does that sound?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Tim Kirkchen would be absolutely perfect for that, although he maybe not, because he's not really a pop culture person, you know?
Yeah.
But Boog Shambi texted me last night. He wants to come on the podcast. He would be great for something like that. And it'd be good to have him and Tim together because they can yell at each other.
For sure. I'm going to try and expand my personal baseball knowledge, which you all know is very limited during this time. And I've decided that I'm going to start with a fine ESPN product 4 days in October about the Red Sox World Series. So I will report back after I watch that to give my review on it.
Yeah. Have you ever read The Last Night of the Yankee Dynasty?
I've heard it's a good one. I got two books lined up right now. Maybe you could be up next after that, though.
Well, you know what? How about I send you a book?
Yes, please. I'm all in.
Definitely do that.
Super duper. All right, that's Bleacher Tweets for today. Tomorrow, last preview of the NL Central. It's coming, and as you all know, you probably have a lot of time on your hands to sit around. And so we've done every division in baseball except for the NL Central. So scroll back through the feed and find those that you haven't already listened to.
Yeah, and if you don't get to it, then I'm going to, after we do the final preview, release that on Tuesday. I'm going to send a tweet out with all six of the previews, send it out on Facebook as well. That's it for today. My thanks to Sparksy, Susan, Alden, Ryan, and Evan, and to Taylor back in his he's in the bunker at his house in Central Connecticut. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.